We've got Sam Cook on the line now. Kia ora, Sam. How are you going?
Oh, hi, everybody.
Good to have you
on. Big loves to our Māori whānau.
Kia ora, Sam. It's Thomas and Adrian here. Or Moki.
Sam, you've got some huge demonstrations and whatnot happening across Australia, but just give us a little bit of a background on what's happened over the last week or so with the comments of the Prime Minister. And, of course, there is that feeling that he is taking people off the land so mining companies can get in there and start opening up that territory.
Sure. So everyone's sort of aware of, I guess, the lurch to the right globally. You know, Australia and I guess New Zealand as well are facing the same situation, and as Indigenous peoples we're seeing the impacts of this type of colonised mind recolonising our countries. What has happened in a very short space of time, but I think it's just an indication that it actually is time, was that on the early hours of Friday morning, a call to action was made from up in around my community. So I'm from the Kimberley region of Western Australia, so the remote north corner. And it was from community members who wanted to start a process of action in order to address some of the issues that haven't actually gone away, in the sense that restriction to land and access has been steadily increasing. It's just not widely reported often in mainstream press, and certainly not to a global footprint. So some communities have already faced situations. There's one in the sort of Goldfields region of Western Australia, Kanana, where all the essential services had been removed, and access to water and electricity meant, and you know, that the community itself had to be forced out of the land. In speaking with the community residents, you know, in kind of their homeless state at the minute, they want to return to country, as do every other Indigenous person, because we all understand our ancestral right and entitlement, but also the ability to maintain our ties and our land practices and cultural obligations while there, which is obviously something our colonial invaders are often bereft in understanding. Mm. So the call came pretty quickly. I'm currently based in Brisbane, but I heard it because I was tagged in, and I'm used to operating on a pretty high-level social media platform as one of the early adopters in the Indigenous community. So we started immediately. It was around about 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday, where we sort of wrapped up going, oh, yeah, we'll go to bed, and maybe in the morning we might have about 1,000 people, having set up the social media platform on Facebook. When we woke up, there were 2,000 people ready to go. So that was an affirmation very quickly that, you know, the temperature had been taken on social media and people were ready. A statement was then issued from the community, and it was a global call to action, because we realised that this may be happening within our own communities, but it's definitely of national consideration here in Australia, but it's also equally importantly of global consequences us as, you know, global Indigenous peoples. So we've operated over the last 6 days on that premise, and have managed to get the message out fairly significantly, to the point where we've got over 20 known actions that are happening physically throughout every state and territory of Australia. We've also launched the virtual protest, which is a global undertaking, and we've got people checked in all around the world to participate, but also, you know, recognising disability access, and some people might not be geographically close to some of the actual physical protests. So it's another way of engaging everyone into the situation to put pressure on government, but also to look to how we can then address our own mechanisms of self-determination and get some real runs on the ground. So that's where we're at. We've got action that commences about 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And then we'll start rolling around Australia and around the world, with the virtual protest happening, what this has been sort of able to achieve in such a short space of time is that the messages then get back to the communities on the ground, that the world actually cares and is watching, and that communities all around Australia and internationally know about this. So that, you know, feeds a whole lot of power to communities who have really been living in despair and hope for a number of years as infrastructure collapses around them, because in reality successive governments have failed in their obligation to what, you know, they gave us in 1967, which was citizenship.
Yeah.
So, you know, continue to fail to meet their own citizen obligation under this premise that, you know, they, the taxpayers, are not even understanding that we're all obligated to, you know, their own mechanisms ourselves. So we are our own taxpayers. Therefore, you know, the whole arguments are pretty flimsy at best.
Yeah, well, I mean, we are of the opinion that, you know, the whole basis of the Australian economy has been based on the mineral wealth of the land that is Indigenous land in yes. Australia. And I think you've paid by far the most tax out of any citizen. And we feel the same way in our own country as well, where we've come under the same you know, under the same oppression as well. Well, I can talk about myself and my own tribe, but you know, or my own tribes. But having a look at this, my friend, my cousin Thomas here, co-host Thomas, he had something interesting to say about Tony Abbott's comments about subsidising lifestyle. We're not here to subsidise people's lifestyles, I think he was quoted as saying. And what did you say about that, Thomas?
Well, I've got a question for Sam, but what I said about it was, you know, it's kind of a ridiculous thing to say when you're talking about people that probably have no work, nowhere to live, now no electricity, no water, you know, the list is just no money. The list is just growing. Is what lifestyle are we talking about? Is it a lifestyle that he aspires to? I don't think so. Would he trade places that lifestyle is so great? What a ridiculous thing to say. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, look, I think our incumbent government just continues to redefine stupidity just generally in a lot of the rhetoric that they're proposing. It's nonsensical. It was deliberately inflammatory in the way in which he conducts himself generally, and even yesterday he completely offended the whole of Ireland. And, you know, we were receiving messages from our Indigenous Irish brothers and sisters saying, what the heck is going on, and standing with us. So, again, you know, the world is really understanding that. But, yeah, to go back to the point, mining is absolutely the undercurrent. There's, you know, as taxpayers, we are heavily subsidising the industry. You just need to look at some of the public information that's available online through sources such as Mindex, which list 1,000 current explorations in the state of Western Australia alone.
Right.
That's not actually, you know, anything to do with the current mines that exist in the state, to which there, you know, there's a substantial amount just dotted over the map of Western Australia, but the whole entire country.
Yeah.
This is just them drilling holes, trying to see what they can get. This is the movement towards the fracking. Fracking in the Kimberley is becoming the real possibility. And, you know, the dilemma there is that they're going to frack into what's called the Canning Basin, which is the complete underwater reservoir for the whole of that region in the northwest, right to the northeast of Australia. So
now,
they will,
that's interesting, because
potentially decimate that.
That's quite terrible, because isn't that area having problems with getting enough water anyway?
Yeah, and then to frack into it, you know, it's baffling.
Just makes it worse.
Yeah, like, and it is exactly as you said. The lifestyle in remote communities is hard because the government has made it hard. They've, you know, over successive governments implemented subpar infrastructure generally. There's been a whole industry of non-Indigenous vendors who have been paid significantly, and what you find is what actually is left that can even touch the community itself isn't big in terms of economics at all. And so it's just abject poverty that they've created and manifested and used then the spin of rhetoric and political posturing to say, well, you know, we've tried to help you all. We cannot subsidise this situation anymore, even though there's a, you know, human rights obligation for your citizens to do so. So, you know, the depth of their twisting and sort of ducking and weaving around, you know, human rights conventions, the United Nations Declaration for Indigenous People, common sense often, you know. I think it's just the groundswell to which over here the spark is now ignited. And action is about to, you know, happen and happen really solidly, you know, within Australia itself.
So it sounds to me that Tony Abbott hasn't got a great future in Parliament over there. Is this like the death throes that's going on now? Is he trying to line himself up for another job somewhere?
He may be the Australian High Commission to New Zealand, you never know. But I wouldn't wish that upon you.
Heaven forbid. Heaven forbid.
Yeah, look, you know, he's been brandished for a number of, you know, months to the last couple of years, actually since the first announcement of his tenure as one-term Tony. And so you could always look up that hashtag and see just what's come about it. But you know, the true sorry story is that he's just a spiteful, vindictive individual unto himself who's now leading, you know, what
How
is...
How does that happen? That's just incredulous.
A small minority, you know, of this kind of lurch to the right, this austerity movement, which is, you know, code for a little bit of white supremacy and a lot of racism worldwide. And the pressure points all around the world have been rising, and it, you know, it's now time, especially over here in Australia, for us to reaffirm our sovereign rights and our determination. You know, it's an interesting generation, I think. There's definitely been a handover with our leaders here who've been at the kind of front line of the rights movements, and we really respect that they've allowed some of us younger generation to take a key role in moving this forward, and especially being able to utilise the power of you know, social media to do so.
Isn't it just wonderful having that social media to give people access to information?
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Like there was civil rights violation over in America, and I knew it about it before it hit the news.
Yeah, the same here.
Yeah, I've had experience. There was an Aboriginal lady that the police here in Queensland, they tasered her in the eye. And then they jumped her. There were about six police officers who jumped her. Quickly we were able to make that known publicly through what's known as the JPEG Wars, which is a meme of information that could be passed through social media, and that made its way all the way to one of the original individuals who was involved in the civil rights Alabama firebombing of one of the churches, who still hasn't got justice. And she contacted me to see if there was a way of supporting her through the social media by doing a similar communication through the JPEG War, so that people knew that she still hadn't had justice, and she was like a six-year-old child, and she's now, you know, in her late 70s, if not early 80s.
I'm getting a bit tired of hearing these people, you know, like senior people saying, this little phrase makes me really suspicious. The phrase is, we're doing a robust and thorough investigation, which means we're really looking hard to find an excuse about why this happened rather than the truth. You never hear them say, we'll get to the bottom of this, we're going to expose the truth. They never say that. They always use these funny little phrases like, we're doing a robust and thorough investigation, which just means cover over.
Every time.
And you'll never see often justice, unfortunately, in Western systems, because they change the rules and regulations at their own whim and leisure. Mm. Yeah.
Sam, so you were talking about the demonstrations tomorrow. So just remind us what's happening. I'm not sure if we're doing anything in New Zealand to support, but I mean, this is part of our way of supporting you guys, is to get the information as far. I mean, we're online now, so we're going out live online around the world. So we've got listeners all around the world. So this information about what's happening will travel around the world. I'm not sure how many people are listening in right now, but...
at least three.
three.
The other three.
The power of you fellas is absolutely through the medium of radio, and also because, you know, our family networks are all solid, and the community over here in Australia is solid, and we've actually got one of your brothers helping us to organise one of the critical protests at Kirribilli House, which is the Prime Minister's Sydney residence tomorrow. So Lance Priestley is representing Māori iwi for us at the front line, which we can't thank him enough for, because it's about us all standing together with solidarity.
Where
you guys can help is get the message out that we will be virtually protesting, and what that means is just for people to post a photo with the words "No Consent" or "SOS Black Australia" and put it on the internet, and that will continue to manifest all around the world. And it's a big statement, the social media footprint.
If each one of us had 20 to 1,000 friends, and we send that out, it's going to spread like wildfire, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, and we'll be at the back end to catch all of that and make sure that the communities on the ground just know how well supported they are around the world. So that, I guess, would be the best way for you fellas to help us stand together.